I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Hey, Jam Master A. That's my new nickname for you.
Hey!
Jam Master A.
Erin Ryan G.
No, this is going to be your permanent nickname, Jam Master A.
I'll take it.
Okay, so I have a question for you this week.
Yeah.
Who is a celebrity that you think deserves an award-winning biopic? Like a prestige movie about them.
One that might be premiering in Cannes?
Yes.
That would be Celine Dion.
Wait. Sorry, I learned Spanish, not French.
I took French for 15 years, and that's still the best I could do.
Wait, so there's a Celine Dion movie coming out, and it's premiering at Cannes.
How many times did you watch the trailer?
Three after I shared it with you yesterday.
Yeah. Okay, so I watched it about 4 or 5, then shared it with my best friend. Why did I share it with her, Erin? Because before COVID, Celine Dion was the last concert we saw together at the Barclay Center. And it was one of the most uplifting, jubilant, like, nights of my life. Women came in matching outfits. They had dances choreographed. And now we get to see the goofy chanteuse in all of her glory in an inspired by Celine Dion biopic called, is it Aileen? Aline?
Yeah, I think so.
Aileen. I can't wait. I will sing along the whole fucking time.
It looks like it's going to be a really, if you like Celine Dion and that's your jam, you will probably like this movie a lot. Let's get to the show. This week, Julissa Arce and Tien Tran joined to tackle the following questions. Hot enough for ya? No, seriously, when are we going to take meaningful steps to alleviate climate change? Has the IOC ruined the Olympics? And who could have predicted that Donald Trump's social media site would have gotten hacked right away? Besides everybody. All this and more right now. Okay, so last week after we recorded, Alyssa, like within hours, Bill Cosby got out of jail. And I think Allison Mack got sentenced. And I think that Alan Weisselberg, the CFO of Trump, the Trump organization, got some charges filed against him.
A lot of crime information.
A lot of crime information. A lot of news happened. And so, you know, instead of trying to get out in front of news that will probably change dramatically within the next 10 minutes, if history proves me right, let's talk about something that isn't going away and isn't changing, and that's climate change.
Yeah.
So this week there's been a few stories that seem to all kind of unite under the banner of, wow, the world seems like it's a little sick right now. New York, where you are, Alyssa, is very hot. How hot is it right there right now?
Right now, it's going to get hotter. I think outside it's about 90 plus, but that's not including the heat index for humidity. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it has fluctuated. And this is the point, too, to why we don't want to call it global warming, because it was last week 105, and 2 days later it was a high of 62. That's fucked up, and that makes things die.
How are you supposed to build when the temperatures are fluctuating like that? That's what I want to know. In the Midwest, where my family lives, my sister was talking about they just ended a long drought. It was up in the low 100s in Minnesota During the winter, it gets to be like 30 below zero there. So that's kind of a hard thing to plan for when it comes to like building stuff. There's also been a huge heat wave on the West Coast in the Pacific Northwest, in Portland, in Seattle. Temperatures were so hot that it was like physically dangerous to be outside, even in the shade. And right now, California is about to get walloped again with another heat wave. Inland temperatures are going to be in the 110s. It's not great. And in Florida right now, they're bracing for, it was Hurricane Elsa. I don't know if it's been downgraded to a tropical storm.
Currently Tropical Storm Elsa, and she just made landfall.
Okay. So, they're also in the middle of searching for bodies in the collapsed rubble of a condo building outside of Miami, that they ended up having to, they'll probably end up having to either call off or pause because of this extreme weather. So, Alyssa, what is there to be done about all of this right now? Is there anything that can be done?
Well, Aaron, a couple things that would be awesome is if people stopped denying this was happening, pretending it was normal, or just like random, like when you just talked about the heat wave that's in California, we're not talking a couple days. It's starting on Wednesday, today, the day we record, and is expected to go through Monday. In the Pacific Northwest, it wasn't just hot. It was hot for ages. 118 people died, and I learned a new word, hyperthermia. It makes sense, but I didn't know that hyperthermia was when your body gets too hot to live, which is a thing. And so, look, we have heard for years and years, it's like, recycle your plastic bottles, do what you can for the earth. But now we need like actual, real intervention so that the earth stops going up like a degree a year or whatever it is now, because this is all very bad. And, you know, in Biden's infrastructure package, there are things that are vitally important that be passed for the good of our country and the world, including $50 billion for infrastructure resilience, $56 billion for modernizing water. So this means getting water to people in rural areas, making sure water is clean, making sure everyone has fucking water, Aaron. Can you believe this? We need this in a bill in 2021.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that we can't desalinate water in any way that's energy efficient is a testament to the fact that technology really only advances when it can make people a lot of money.
Exactly.
I do think that the global warming thing has sort of, there's only so much we can do to adjust to it. And there are things that I'm hearing climate scientists talk about, and there are things that I'm hearing people just in general talking about that I think are maybe framing things incorrectly. And I'm not trying to pick on you here, but like consumer choice, I think, is a really minor factor in all of these things that are causing pollution and excess energy consumption. Like, I saw some people in New York City tweeting about how they received a text about turning their air conditioning off. Well, there's an entire garden of skyscrapers that have nobody in them that are running the AC on blast all day. So like, what the fuck? Why are consumers the ones that have to deal with the consequences of this when commercial buildings and commercial real estate is just kind of home free? Like, why are individual people being told not to water their lawns ever when golf courses exist? You know, why commercial interests being allowed kind of unfettered normalcy while consumers are being asked to make all these sacrifices? And it just sort of makes me mad. I mean, when I saw the Gulf of Mexico on fire this past weekend, that's a sentence I never thought I would say. There was a leak of an oil pipeline that caused a fire in the ocean that had to be put out by other water. It looked cool. I will say that.
It looked like the trailer for the new Independence Day or Armageddon.
Yeah, it really did look like Cthulhu was on his way up to be like, sup guys, here I am. Told you I was coming. Now here I am. It's upsetting because I think consumers are told that they need to like turn off their sprinklers or take less long showers, which they should be doing. Like it's not, you shouldn't be hanging out in the shower for half an hour, but it's also like they're seeing all of this guidance aimed at them when, there's so much being wasted in the way that, agriculture is being done, especially in like California. There's not really a ton of incentive for people to water their like massive fields of crops in a way that recycles water, is environmentally friendly or anything like that. So, I think it's sort of like, the feeling that people got when, there'd be all these COVID guidelines and then, the governor of the governor would be photographed at a 5-star dinner without a mask on. Yeah. And regular people were sort of like, well, fuck you then. Like, why am I doing any of this? That's how I feel.
Totally.
That's how I kind of feel like environmental guidelines function when it comes to consumers, because we see what everyone else is doing and it's like, well, fuck you then,
It is like, well, it's exactly to your point, all the people in the Pacific Northwest were told, can you turn your air, like people don't put your air conditioners on, you're going to short out the grid. And it's like, it's 100+ degrees. And the solution to the energy problem is to tell people in homes to not cool themselves. Like, how is there not another solution? Like you said, why not clear out the skyscrapers and be like, you know what, we're just going to turn the air conditioning off here mm-hmm. for a couple days. Mm-hmm. Now, look, there may be reasons. We don't need people tweeting at us that, like, if you turn it down, it's too hard to cool it back down. What the fuck ever, okay? The point is that real people who work hard every day, the solution to our climate problem is not telling them to broast during a heat wave.
Here on the West Coast, the super high temperatures cause water to evaporate more quickly, which cause drier conditions, which cause forest fires, which if you're somebody that lives anywhere near a place where there are forest fires, that's super bad for your lungs. Like, it's really bad to
super
be breathing
bad.
That stuff in. And if you're raising a child and or you're someone who is otherwise vulnerable, it's not sustainable for you to live in a place like that. And if you're not somebody who has the mobility to leave a place where there's a lot of fires, that could lead to like really terrible health outcomes. I mean, people, I think, are unwilling to admit that the climate change crisis is also like a public health mm-hmm. problem, and it's like, we would save a ton of money on all of the problems that people are dealing with as a result of climate change if we only took some basic steps to make sure that people were safe in the, in the meantime. And then in the long term, we're not making the problem worse.
It's fucking deep.
Yeah. I also wanted to say, I saw a story out of Canada that really felt like an Alyssa story for me, which is that fruit is cooking on the vine.
Yes. It's cooking on the vine.
It's all that ruined jam. Did you feel sad when you saw that story?
I felt so sad for it. And, I also learned here, because we had a spate of like 5 days of terrible rain, which is like super unusual for this time of year. Normally we're in a drought. And so your story broke. There were two pieces of my heart that broke. One was that the fruit here may be dissolving from all of the rain. And in other places, it is cooking to death, neither of which is good for anybody.
Yeah. One thing I've thought about during this kind of spate of climate-related stories is how I'm worried that not taking environmental precautions are going to start to be political signifiers. Like, how someone not wearing a mask in the grocery store is like, I know all about you. I know what you're doing, I feel like driving past someone's house and they've got a big green lawn will be like,
sprinklers on.
Yeah, I know what you're doing. Or like, a giant truck in a suburb It's like, you're not.
I wish that we could have like lawn signs that you just left around that said bad citizen. You're a bad citizen. You're a bad global citizen. You're a bad citizen on my neighborhood. You're a bad neighbor. Like it's stuff like that is, because then it makes it so hard because you know that your sacrifice when you're like, you know what, this is for the greater good, is like you think to yourself, you're like, well, I'm not doing, my lawn is dead. My bushes are dead. My fruit is cooked. And this guy down, this terrible person mm-hmm. is not facing any consequences mm-hmm. for his bad citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think to that, yeah, I mean, I would absolutely come to that conclusion as well. But I think that what's really important when we're talking about this is that all of us, from the big green yard people to the little brown cactus yard people to the apartment people, understand that we need to fight the real enemy, which is not each other. It's billionaires, commercial real estate, giant, like,
carbon.
You know, it's carbon, it's fossil fuel companies. It's not, it's, I mean, it is kind of each other to, but to a much lesser extent than it is to those like giant polluters.
Well, do you remember when I sometimes, you know, we really are political witches, but back when Trump pulled America out of the climate agreement, we said that that was like one of his acts of treason, that that was like a real act of treason mm-hmm. because it was such a permission structure for other countries in the world to be like, if America says it's fine. So like, fuck him for that too.
God, he sucks.
He's terrible.
He was so bad while he was in office, and everything that he did in office is proving in retrospect to be even
as terrible
worse.
As we thought.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we solved the climate crisis. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Olympics. And welcome back. We have reached the part of the show where it's not just me and Alyssa anymore. We are joined by two lovely women. You know and love both of them, and neither really needs an introduction, but I'm going to give both of them introductions. Anyway, first up, she is the author of the forthcoming book, You Sound Like a White Girl, Julissa Arce. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back. And the book is now available for pre-order. So put in your pre-order. I am in love with the cover, so please go pre-order my new book.
That the cover is awesome. Did you get to handpick the designer, or like do you know who did it?
No, I mean, I know the name of the person, but I don't get to pick them. Like the publisher assigns them to you, but you do get to like give feedback. So like the color of the cover before was like a teal color, but I really wanted it to be like to pop. And so the pink that's on the cover is not pink for like girl. It's like it's called Rosa Mexicano. So it's like a very Mexican color that like I had that was the color at my wedding. And I just like love that color. It reminds me so much of like my culture, my place of birth. So that's the pink on the cover. I really, really love it.
Oh, you really hit the jackpot designer-wise. It's really cool. You and Dana Schwartz both have incredible book covers.
It's a good company to be in.
Definitely. last but not least, and by last, I mean second, she is, we've been calling her the Queen of Illinois. It is Tien Tran. Welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Tien, I am reading a book right now where there is a character who is the King of Michigan. And it is, I was like, wow, I feel like
all of the Midwest is under royalty.
Right, right. Well, it's a post-apocalyptic Kurt Vonnegut book about, you know, the last post-America. And there is a King of Michigan, and it's quite a ride. Anyway, welcome to you both. I'm really excited to talk about the topic that we are about to talk about. Alyssa, you and I are both big Olympic stans. Like, I feel like we've both got some really deep abiding love for the Olympics. Tien, I know you're a huge fan of the Olympics. I know you're a huge fan of certain aspects of the Olympics. And Julissa, I know you have a lot to say about jingoism and hyper-nationalism. And I feel like this is a great opportunity for us to talk about the gathering shit show that is Tokyo 2020 in the year 2021. Tien, I want to start with you. How do you feel generally about the Olympics taking place this month in Japan?
First and foremost, I think they should be canceled. Like, I have such a love-hate relationship with the Olympics. I both love all of the, like, athletic stories that come out of it. You all know that I love the U.S. women's national team. It pains me so much that I love them so much. and I really think, like, just everything that I'm reading about it, and I think we can talk about this later too, but the Olympics have just had a history of being bad for the cities that they end up taking place in. But just the way that it's being handled, I saw a thread yesterday from a journalist that was like, I'm the COVID liaison for this, and I don't have any answers for my group on how we're being taken care of, how people are being protected. I think we're just having a bunch of people from all around the world coming to one place, and we're still in the middle of a pandemic. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it seems a little bit like the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, has decided that they're going to ask forgiveness and not permission, mm-hmm. and hope that, you know, and by the time any bad effects have happened as a result of bringing people from all over the world together for an athletic competition on an island where something like 10% of people are vaccinated, I think that they're just going to have, they're going to take the money and be like, whoops, sorry, mm-hmm. by the time any bad effects are felt. Julissa, how do you feel about the Olympics taking place this year? Do you feel better or worse than you normally feel? And how do you normally feel?
So my normally feel might surprise you. But how I currently feel is that 83% of people in Japan, according to a survey, say they don't want the Olympics to take place. And so I feel like we should all feel like the people of Japan feel, because ultimately it's going to affect them the most. And if they don't want the Olympics to happen, then they shouldn't happen. I think that it's probably a little too late for them not to happen, because it's like a moving train that can't be stopped anymore. But yeah, all of those concerns about how low rates of vaccination. I mean, there's already been, the last time I checked, 3 or 5 athletes that have tested positive for COVID. I heard things like they're not going to be passing out condoms in like the Olympic Village because they don't want to like encourage people to like hook up.
That'll stop them. That'll stop them. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Exactly. I'm like, you're just making a problem worse. Like, now we're going to be not just spreading COVID, but like potentially STDs. you know, so.
Oh God.
If you still haven't left your home country and you are an athlete, bring your own condoms. So yeah, I think it's a disaster, and it should really, I mean, you know, the disaster really started even before the pandemic, right? With all of sort of the corruption that was going on with the Olympics. And I mean, initially, I think the people of Japan were super excited to have the Olympics in Japan, because it was a sort of like recovery from the tsunami and a sort of like where Japan is back. But, you know, it's been plagued with corruption, and now everything going on with COVID. And it just feels like we're living in two worlds. One, which is like the world of vaccinated people in the Western world, and then the rest of the world who has to like abide by our standards and say like, oh, well, we're over the pandemic. Like, we have indoor dining. So like, let's go have a worldwide event. So I think they should be canceled. How I normally feel, I actually kind of really love the Olympics. And because I love sports, this is the only one time where I think it's acceptable to like cheer for your country. Because I'm definitely the kind of person who, when I'm walking or when I'm driving around anywhere, if I see a US flag on someone's front porch flying, I immediately think, a racist person lives in that house. Like, I just do like, I don't make the rules, but that's just what's become a rule. And, you know, if you don't like it, go talk to your people, because it's not my fault that the US flag has become a symbol of hatred and racism. However, you know, I was just at the Mexico game, the Mexico-Nigeria, which was a friendly game. And I mean, I was like, you know, people were wearing Mexican flags and I was draped in a Mexican flag and I was cheering for Mexico. But I feel like my nationalism for Mexico is different because it's like the thing that this country wants to take away from me always, like my Mexican identity. And so I want to hang on to it more. So I love the Olympics generally. I don't usually cheer for the U.S. though, except for in gymnastics. Usually I cheer for like all the other, like, you know, the country that has like the one athlete that made it to the Olympics. I'm just like, right. Yes, you know, I want that person to win the gold medal. Yeah, so it's all conflicting feelings. You know, it's all very conflicting. But at this point in time, I wish that we weren't putting an entire country at risk because of the money that's involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Alyssa, as I think the resident biggest fan of pageantry and pomp here today, how do you feel about the Olympics in general? And what do you think about what's happening in Tokyo? And another kind of tag to that is, you know, now we're finding out, or we're learning, or we're all maybe grown up enough to absorb the idea that the IOC is a very corrupt organization that's very exploitative. Has it gotten worse? Is the IOC like ruining the Olympics, or have the Olympics always been kind of ruined, but we just are now talking about it more?
Okay, let's take the last one first. So you guys, true story, I was in Copenhagen in 2009 or 2010 when the IOC was picking the city for 2022. I don't remember, but Chicago was up for it. And so Michelle Obama was there, Oprah was there, and it is like the fucking weirdest deal. It's like the Iowa caucuses on steroids for how a city gets picked. And it's like you have princes from these countries who show up, and then you're like in the hallways, and there's like all this like vote trading that's like, hey, look, I know my city's not gonna get it, but like I'll vote for you if you then vote for me for the World Cup for 2024 or whatever it is. And you start hearing all these rumors and you don't know what's true and what's not, but it ain't right and it ain't on the level. And so that was my first real window. And it sounded as if it's probably been more corrupt in years past, but now social media and news are shining a light on how fucked up it is. And so it's actually, I think, maybe a little bit better than it used to be. I think a lot of cities maybe got picked with bags of money back in the past, but who am I to, you know, share widely shared rumors and gossip?
The Salt Lake City is one that we can widely acknowledge had some kind of...
It is. And, you know, here's my view, too. Because these are such infrastructure nightmares for the cities and the people, there should be one city on every continent. That should be... It should rotate, like, you know, in the same order. And that is... all that should be there. Actually, you know what? I'll let there be two cities per continent to accommodate winter and summer opportunities. But other than that, it should be like that. And I fucking love the Olympics. I love the Olympics. You guys, part of me, I think it's because I am older than everyone. So I lived through a lot more years of not having cable. So when the Olympics came, it was like something great to watch on television. And I think that like, if you... Here's why I love it. I think it's very unifying in the following way. We've all done one thing that is like represented in the Olympics. Do you know what I mean? Like for 15 minutes in the mid 80s, I held the 12 and under record for 50 meter butterfly, you know, in swimming. Okay, for like 5 whole minutes. And so it's like, I think all of us tried something that we see, you know, that we weren't that great at. And so you know what it took for that person. And it's the time, if no other time, it's the time when stories of people who really sacrificed, whose families really sacrificed, who gave up everything, like the story of Debbie Thomas. And I mean, I love Debbie Thomas so much. It was so sad that Katarina Witt got her every single time. But like those, to me, that's what makes it great, is that it's a time to celebrate people who have actually fucking worked their asses mm-hmm. off. Yeah. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad what's happening now, because I think the stories that are being highlighted are the people who've worked their asses off, who are getting denied for not arbitrary reasons, but it feels like there was higher ground to take with a lot of this stuff and it just wasn't taken. And so that's a real fucking bummer.
You brought up a good point about like the athletes and how hard they work. And I think that that's the reason why I sort of make a conscious decision to sort of separate the entities to like the persons, because like these people give up their whole entire lives to dedicate themselves to their craft and to their art. And I do really, I mean, even when you said that, and as I said, oh yeah, they should be canceled. Like, I guess when I stop and I put myself in the shoes of someone who's been training for like 5-6 years and, you know, the Olympics were already postponed from last year. And then they kept training, you know, they had to extend their training, extend their like dietary restrictions, extend all of these things for one more year for now to then be canceled again. Like I do feel for the athletes, and mm-hmm. I wish there was a world in which you could do both, like keep an entire country safe and like honor the hard work and sacrifices of the athletes.
I totally agree. I was just going to say, like, and there are some athletes that have such incredible stories, like American gymnast Suni Lee she's from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and she's Hmong American. I think she's the first Hmong American gymnast to be on the U.S. team. And she has like 5 siblings, and her dad was like paralyzed a couple years ago. And she's just like so fun to watch and so dynamic, and it's so exciting that she made the team. But at the same time, for every Suni Lee, there's a Shikari Richardson, you know, where it's like she is, you know, she was banned from competition. She's the sprinter who was banned from competition for taking pot as a performance enhancing drug. And, you know, and then there's the story of or Olympic swimming wanting to ban a type of swim cap that is designed to cover natural kinky hair, which is a lot of times a type of hair that Black women would have. So it seems to me like all of these hardworking athletes are kind of unfairly being used as smoke screens for the shit that the IOC is trying to pull, both on a like economic level when it comes to the cities that are hosting and on a like personnel level when they're unfairly banning athletes or testing them for hormone levels and stuff. And Tian, you looked like you had something to say also.
Well, I was going to speak to like the fact that what I love the most about the Olympics is those athlete stories, and that they are like, to me, cross lines of nationality. Like that is the thing. Like I feel like everyone can root for a story separate from what country they are representing, which is like my favorite part about the Olympics. Cause as someone who, I know I wrote for the U.S. women's national team, but for other sports, like I just love watching people be, wherever they're from, the best at what they're doing, and watching just someone who has worked, like you said, worked so hard to get to the point that they are. But on the other hand, you know, like you were saying, Aaron, it's like they work so hard. We're letting the IOC kind of arbitrarily just cut dreams short for people from outdated rules that feel like they're rooted in some, not feel, they're rooted in like systemic racism. So I think if we're going to continue to have the Olympics, like, I think it's like abolish the IOC. Like, let's have some more thoughtful ways of kind of having these like games and showing these athletes in different ways.
You know, the thing about Shikari Richardson. Okay. So first of all, I have never, ever, ever done a smoked pot or taken an edible and been faster. Or, like, been more athletic. Like, it is quite the opposite of what happened. So to think that, like, marijuana is somehow enhancing drug is just kind of silly. It's not, like, something that's making her stronger. Like, if anything, it's, like, having the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that it really brought up for me hearing her story was, you know, this, like, random reporter asking her about her mom dying. And so it's, like, what... You know, I feel like the media has ruined so many things, like with Naomi Osaka, right? Like she had to like pull out of the French Open because the media was just not leaving her alone. They were relentless. And I think like, you know, first of all, she doesn't, Sha'Carri doesn't need an excuse to smoke weed. Like, weed is legal in Oregon. It's been decriminalized in many places. We know how many Black and Brown lives marijuana has ruined because of how we are criminalized. So that aside, like, she didn't need an excuse, but I do think, like, what if this reporter hadn't asked such an intrusive question about her biological mom dying? Maybe she wouldn't have been in such a terrible place, right? Where that was like the only, like, in her own words, like, that was the only place where she felt like she could hide, right? And like, how sad is that? That, you know, what kind of mental health is the U.S. Providing to its athletes as they have been navigating this, like, horrible circumstances? So I think that's part of the problem, is like the media and their involvement and how they don't leave people alone, whether it's athletes or celebrities or just like even normal everyday people. The other thing that it really kind of stood out for me was, you know, this testosterone test for some women and how they came back like higher, but their natural testosterone, it wasn't like enhancing. And so I just think that all of these tests, whether it's these testosterone tests or like the caps that are like, they said that they didn't allow those swim caps because they did not follow the natural shape of the head. And it's like, whose head, you know, whose testosterone levels? Because if your diet is different and like the things that you eat in your culture are different, you're going to have different levels for different things. And so I think that as long as all of these tests have a Western, aka white standard, people of color will ultimately continue to be penalized in like every area of life, as long as white is the standard against which we are measuring everything. And ultimately, that's the problem.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and the part about Sha'Carri Richardson that was so disappointing, and she said it, look, I mean, and this is, we can like it, we cannot like it, the rules are the rules, right? And she acknowledged that she broke the rule. However, the U.S. Olympic team had the opportunity and could have let her run in the 100-meter relay. And, you know, they decided to say, well, she had smoked the pot during her qualifying time. They fucking know she qualifies. They could have done this, you know. And that to me was the part where they just went beyond what is a known rule, and they had some latitude and they decided to not use it for good.
Mm-hmm. I know. I think that kind of goes with, too, like, that we as a society and those who govern, like the governing bodies of athletics, all hold athletes to a ridiculous high, like a ridiculously high standard that the average person, or actually not, no, like some of these standards, we shouldn't be kind of enforcing them. They're just outrageous. And to the point where like it leads to these situations where people are making decisions based on their own mental health and like they're being punished for it. We're setting a terrible precedent if that's the case.
Yeah. And I think to go along with that, you know, the Olympic athletes, this is like this is the biggest stage that a lot of athletes in a lot of sports could ever possibly be on. And I think fame and a stage this big is a mind fuck for almost anybody, even like, you know, college athletes, NBA athletes who suddenly become stars who are already like knocking on the door. It's like, it's a huge mind fuck. Fame is a mind fuck. And a lot of them haven't been like adequately prepared for the way that it will function for them. And I also think that the media is very unforgiving of imperfections or mistakes that they might have made. Now, I'm not talking about that U.S. swimmer who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Like, that's the kind of mistake that it's like, okay, yeah, fuck that guy, you know? But I'm talking about mistakes where maybe somebody said something clumsy on social media. Like, I saw people tweeting about Sha'Carri Richardson not liking the Lil Nas X video where he gives Satan a lap dance. I personally thought the video was amazing, and I think he's a publicity genius. The fact that Sha'Carri Richardson didn't like it and found it offensive does not make her a bad athlete that's like not worth cheering for. She expressed an opinion. She wasn't like, throw Lil Nas X in jail. She just was like, I found the video offensive. Fine, you know? I think that holding people to this like weird, they have to not only be perfect, like great athletes who don't do anything to enhance themselves, they also have to be mentally equipped to handle the pressure of being on a stage that big. And they have to have like personal views that are ready for prime time, which I think is really, really unfair.
I know. I've always found it so annoying when the media is like, that athlete, the criticism after like a press conference is like, that athlete was very short and maybe not like personable enough. And they're like, that person just worked their ass off for hours in front of a crowd of people going 110%. And now you want them to sit and talk to you and give you like perfect sound bites. Like, I think that's outrageous.
Oh my God. Tien, I live in a part of LA where like you have to take stairs from the street to the houses. So my house is up like 5 flights of stairs. And I don't even like it when my husband talks to me when I come inside from coming up the stairs. Oh my God. Like, you need to give me 30 seconds before you're asking me questions about where things are in the cupboards. And like, I cannot imagine like just having finished like a 10,000 meter race and being expected to like have a sound bite.
I know my partner, I've been biking around, and every time I come into the apartment, she's like, are you mad at me? I'm like, I don't know. <Am I?" laughs>
Maybe that's the thing. Like, they're not mad. Can you just give them a couple minutes? Like, let them catch their breath. Well, let's focus instead of on the IOC deserves like all the bad press and this bad scrutiny that it's getting for all the reasons that we talked about here, for the fact that it's holding the Olympics in a country that doesn't want them, that isn't really prepared for them, especially right on the heels of the Euro Cup being essentially what people predicted the Euro Cup would be, which was an incubator for various. It was like an orgy for germs. You know, all around the world coming together, swapping pins, and then going back to different countries with memories. So we kind of know what's about to happen. The IOC deserves all the bad press it's getting over this and different ways that it's been exploitative. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the fact that the next Olympics are in China, which I don't think I'll be able to watch. I think that's like a bridge too far for me. Yeah, and it's like coming up this winter, so I think this is probably the last Olympics for a little while for me. Alyssa, let's talk, instead of all the bad stuff, let's talk a little bit about some of our favorite moments of athletes that worked hard and overcame. So in your long career of watching the Olympics on first, you know, a rabbit ears TV powered by gerbils, and then, you know, cable, what are some of your favorite moments from the athletes?
Oh, you guys, when Midori Ito landed a quad in competition, that was in like 84 or 88. I really love the ice skating. I love, even though I was only 4 years old for it, when the Americans beat Russia in Lake Placid for hockey, I have watched the movie Miracle. Probably 400 times. When I am down in the dumps, I will put that on and my husband will come in the room. He'll be like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm Michael Ruzioni. I play for the United States of America. I mean, it's like, that is, and of course I know which ones went to the University of Wisconsin to coach and which went to Minnesota. But no, I mean, to me, I just had so much. Like, especially, I think for me, it was really ice skating because it was nothing I could really do. Janet Evans swimming, though, I mean, like the sheer strength and power. And I love when the thing I love about swimming is that you can watch every meter, every like inch of it happening. You can be like, pull harder, you can do it. And, you know, so for me, Janet Evans was, I mean, at the time at that Olympics, I think she was like the most decorated female swimmer of all time. And so, I mean, I see Midori Ito landing a quad, everything Debbie Thomas ever did, including messing up her long program every time against Katarina Witt when they both did the long program to Carmen, I remember. So those are my big, sorry, I don't have a lot of dude memories. Mine are mostly ladies.
Don't apologize for that.
That's the ideal state, honestly. Julissa, do you have some favorite memories of athletes in the Olympics?
I don't have a very good long-term memory. So I don't think I remember specifically, but since you brought up movies, I think one of my favorite Olympic movies is Cool Runnings.
Yes.
You know, with the Jamaica team. Like, yes, I wish I had been. I don't think I was alive when it happened in real life. But I had not watched the movie until during the pandemic. And so that was like a very nice treat of an Olympic moment to watch. So yeah, that's all I got.
Okay. Tiana, I can predict what some of your favorites are.
Okay.
But I would love to hear from you. I want to see if I'm right.
I mean, my first is when the U.S. won the two top. The U.S. women's national team won the 2012 Olympics in London because it was kind of like the last hurrah of some of the big stars that were crossing between generations. So you had people like Abby Wambach was still playing and starting, and like Hope Solo was still playing. But you also had people like Alex Morgan coming up. So it was just like the perfect bridge between the two generations, and seeing them win was so fun. As a kid, I loved the Magnificent Seven of like Carrie Strug and like that time of like Dominique Moceanu, Dominique Dawes, just like loved all of them. Also loved Simone Biles, that team. What was the Fab Five, right?
I think so, yeah.
The Fab Five. And I loved watching Kerry Walsh and Misty May Trainor until I found out that Kerry Walsh was an anti-masker. But until then, loved watching beach volleyball and seeing them win. Yeah. I think they won like three in a row.
I am just, look, this is a dumb take, but every time I watch beach volleyball, I am like so impressed that they're able to be so athletic wearing such small amounts of clothing. Like I would be terrified of like parts of me flying out, but I guess that's what happens when you're that like muscular and like in control of your like physical presence. You know, I love watching the track and field. I loved watching like Florence Griffith Joyner, Jackie Joyner Kersee when I was very little. Like we would get our weekly readers in school and there would be like Olympics preview like before we went away for the summer. And I remember some of the incredible like nail art on the female track stars. Yeah. And how flamboyant and cool like the hairstyles, the nails, the like, I love the like swagger of female track athletes, like female sprinters and hurdlers, and how like just completely like feeling themselves they are. It's so like, if my baby is a little girl, I want her to look at women like that and be like, yep, that's cool. That is cool. Like women can be that strong and like happy and confident and good at what they're doing and not apologize for it. And I think it's part of the reason I was so sad about Sha'Carri Richardson, because she's such a like inspiring presence for those reasons. She's so like confident and good at what she does. And like, I think the world will be worse for being deprived of seeing her on the world stage showing everybody like how good she is. I also love watching, like, look, watching marathons is not fun because they take like 2 hours and 25 minutes. But the final lap of a marathon is usually around the Olympic stadium. And in some cases, athletes don't realize that they're about to medal until they get into the stadium. So like in 2004 in Greece, there was a U.S. marathoner named Dina Castor who ran into the stadium and found out that she was going to win a bronze medal. And she like starts bawling. And it's like this, it's the most, like, I'm going to cry just even thinking about it. It's on my cry playlist on YouTube whenever I really just need to like, just like express my tear ducts. I go and watch it. So it's just, I agree with everyone that it's really fun to watch people just completely at the top of their game. And you know, it doesn't really, I've kind of, when I was little, I would always cheer for the USA, but as I've gotten older, I kind of just cheer for whatever athlete I like the best. And I've kind of decoupled it from nationalism. And it's just, you know, it's great for them and for all the hard work they've done. I just wish that the organization that makes it possible or impedes it from being better than it should be would get out of the way. And so it was more about the athletes and less about the distractions. And I wanted to end by saying this. You know, I live in Los Angeles. I think the Olympics are supposed to be here in 2028. I am getting the fuck out of here before they are here. I do not want to be in this city at that point. I don't know how we're going to do it. But, you know, Godspeed to whatever, 10-year-old now is currently training to be a gold medalist in 2028. So I think that wraps up what we're going to talk about when it comes to the Olympics. There's a lot of sports stuff to talk about this week. I wanted to talk about the Rachel Nichols thing, but I feel like that's its own very long conversation about how... Yeah, we can get into that, but we will get into it in a future episode. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I feel petty. Welcome back. The show is almost over, but not quite, because we have dumb shit to get mad about before we go. It is I Feel Petty. These are things that don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but that have really gotten under our skin this week, or possibly forever. So let's get going. Julissa, do you want to start us off?
Yes, just a disclaimer, though. I do actually think this kind of matters in the grand scheme of things. And I never get the assignment right with I Feel Petty. okay, so it's somewhat sports. Okay, so one is sports related. There are two things that are related. So first with the sports thing. So Mexican national team, the fans have this really terrible saying where the opposite goalie is like kicking the ball and they say puto, right? Which is like, sometimes it's used as a derogatory term for gay people. And so FIFA has decided, you know, it's really offensive. And so they're going to start, like, they stop the game when the fans say it and, like, make an announcement about how it's offensive. And in a recent game, they actually fined Mexico because the fans were saying it. And then for the next two games, the games had to be played without fans as, like, punishment for Mexican fans saying this word, which I would support, and I very much support that we stop using that word. Like, let's actually get more creative with our chants and, like, not use words that are offensive to a group of people. However, I think it's incredibly hypocritical that FIFA did that to the Mexican fans and to Mexico when the next World Cup is in Qatar, where it is literally a crime. It is illegal to be gay. People are jailed for being gay. People are killed for being gay. And so it just feels very performative that, like, we're going to slap a wrist on Mexican fans and not allow them to come cheer their team because they say this word. But then we're going to have the most important FIFA tournament in the whole entire world in a country that is incredibly anti-gay. So I just wish that the actions aligned. So I think, you know, FIFA needs to do something about that. And I feel very petty about the fact that, like, we couldn't go watch games and yet, like, everybody's going to go to a country where it's illegal to be gay. Like, I think that's just dumb. And then the other thing that is somewhat related, and it's about language and the words that we use. And Elisa, you reminded me of it before we started recording, which is how Twitter is banning people for using the word gringo, like, for people calling, like, if I was like, at Aaron, you know, you're such a cute gringa.
They're banning then, like, people
I would
for
get
that?
Banned. Yes. Wow. People have been banned on Twitter for using the word gringo.
Okay.
And I'm like, you know what feels oppressive? What feels oppressive is that you're using our native language against us. Like, gringo is not a derogatory term. It literally just means a white person. And if you are offended because I called you a white person, then you need to go investigate that.
You know? I mean, honestly, you know, I have a shirt that has the word gringo on it. It says, "Help stamp out gringo food. Eat at Garcia's Kitchen, Albuquerque, New Mexico." Like, and it shows, and it's like a cartoon pepper stamping on a hot dog. And it's, like, very funny.
So I feel very petty about those things. Very much so.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I hadn't heard of that yet. And, like, to me, gringo is, like, less offensive than being called, like, Karen at this point. Agree.
Yeah, but the death threats can keep going. and like all those crazy violent things. Just let those stay on.
Yeah, we got to protect white people's feelings. Let's not offend white people who don't even really know what it means or like the context. Look, and yet white people still eat at a restaurant called Cracker Barrel. So
there you go.
Tien, what do you feel petty about this week?
Julia, so you chose both two things that are impactful and important. And I would like to follow up with the fact that I know it's a very new technology that they're trying out, but Google, when you say restaurants are open and I show up and try to get food and they're not, it's very upsetting to me. I recently I had a craving. This happened the other day. I had a craving for Panda Express. Do not cancel me. I love it so much. It's like my go-to vice. And I walked to, I looked online and it said it was opened. And I got there and it's been closed for a while now. So Google, I need you to update your restaurant hours of operation because I can't show up after walking in the heat expecting orange chicken and lo mein and not getting it at all. It ruined my day. That's what I feel petty
and
about.
Do they not know that you're the queen of Illinois?
And I'm the queen.
Like, hello.
I'm the queen of Illinois, and when I want stores to be open in my jurisdiction, they should be opened.
Google has been so bad lately with knowing if things are open.
I know.
It has been... Like during pandemic, it was fine. It was like, okay, I get it. You're not going to be totally up to it, but come on.
But you guys, don't the stores have to update it?
Is it the stores?
How would Google know?
I don't know how that works.
Because this happened. So I only say because this happened to me the other day. I checked for a store on Main Street to see if it was open. I look and it says, you know, that it's open, and I get down there and it's closed. And then I go down the next day and it's closed again when it says it should definitely be open and was not July 5th. And so I kind of think the stores have to update the info. Yeah, I don't think that like Google satellites.
I mean, that totally makes sense. I've just been imagining that there's just one dedicated team at Google that's like updating every single small business and business operation.
Yeah, but it's like, well, what is Google even for? Like, if they can't
exactly
figure that out, like, you know everything about where I've gone.
Good point. Good point.
You know,
they should know if there's activity happening at that location, and if there's not, they should say may not be open.
Right. Exactly. That seems like, come on, guys. You know what my face looks like. You can like, I don't know.
Yeah, we're asking Google to be more invasive. Okay. I need you to
figure it out.
We're asking Google.
Google should just take the information they have and use it in a way that is helpful. Like, I think just for every evil thing they do, they should do a correspondingly benign to helpful thing. That is not too much to ask. My standards are low. Guys, this is petty in the true spirit of pettiness, in that I am gleefully processing a news story that has nothing to do with me. It's Schadenfreude, but I love it. So Donald Trump, the former president, current Florida man, and his minion, his thumb-shaped minion, Jason Miller, started a social media site that launched last week. It's called Getter, which is so stupid. It's a stupid name that I feel like is maybe a blue-collar comedy callback, which is a joke that they didn't come up with a comedian. Anyway, it's exactly what you would expect. It is the Trump graphic design of technology. So it launched this past weekend, and 500,000 people signed up, which, just so you know, is what, 1 in 600 Americans. So it's not that many people. 500,000 people registered to use the site, and within a matter of hours, Getter was hacked. Getter was hacked, including people on Getter, including former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Jason Miller, which is hilarious, had their profiles altered to read, "Juba Baghdad was here. Follow me in Twitter." Smiley face. I just think that's great. I think it's, you know, I've gotten to a point where I do not feel sympathy for people constantly touching the hot stove of Trump land and getting burned over and over again, especially since the reason they're touching the stove over and over again is because they're delusional racists. So this is fine for me. I'm glad that Gitter got hacked. I praise Juba Baghdad for his work on this specifically. I don't know what else he's done in his life, but this specifically was good work. And I really can't wait to see how it gets hacked next. And that's what I feel petty about this week.
I feel like that's an aspirational petty.
Oh, it's great. Alyssa, why don't you bring us home? What are you feeling petty about this week?
Okay, guys, I'm going to just bring this full circle because my petty is Olympic themed. And here is what I'm pissed about. Of all the things, okay, of all the money that goes to the Olympics, of all the money they raise, of all the money in the Olympics, how is it possible that all the Olympic shit isn't made in America? Like, how is it the uniforms should all be made in America? The opening ceremony gear should all be made in America. The closing ceremony gear should all be made in America. And I just don't understand, with all of the artisans and companies we have here, all of the clothiers, how is it that it's not all made? And the truth is, in 2008, this was a very big deal because remember Ralph Lauren had done like the opening ceremony outfits or something for China, and people were like, whoa, I think this shit was made in China. And everyone was like, that's terrible. Well, but they're still doing it. And like Kim Kardashian got some contract for Skims. Skims is making the loungewear, and that sent me down the rabbit hole of her website to see if any of her shit didn't have imported underneath like fabric care. And it didn't. And so I just feel like if we want to help people, small businesses, all kinds of folks who are trying to make it here, maybe this would have been a great way to have thrown a lot of business to people during a pandemic. And yes, there are some things that are made in America. I think the equestrian gloves are made in Massachusetts. Like, there are some things, but I just think everything should be made here. And that is what I feel petty about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about our U.S. textile team? We should give them a chance on the international stage. That's a very good point. And I don't think it's that. I think it's like somewhat petty, but you make an important larger point.
Let's just make it in America, people, at least for the Olympics. And like, I know that it's more expensive at times to make it in America, but there are a lot of amazing t-shirt companies and cotton that use cotton that are out in LA that are making all kinds of great stuff. And specifically in LA. And I just feel like a lot of low-hanging fruit we're letting rot again, Erin.
Yeah. Also, like, it's not like they don't have money.
Right.
It's not like it's not like the Olympics in the U.S. is not a money-generating enterprise.
For real.
You know?
I like the idea of, like, giving small businesses, like, opportunities. Unfortunately, as I said, I've been traumatized. So like, similarly to when I see like a US flag in someone's house, I'm like, racist. When I hear like, make things in America, I hear like, America first. And I'm like, oh no, disassociate yourself from that, Julissa, because I need therapy.
Julissa, I'm talking about lovely women and men in Los Angeles who are making well-crafted t-shirts.
I am
like,
down with
I just
that.
Feel like if we're making shit that says USA on it, it shouldn't be made in China.
I mean, that's a good point. It reminds me of like Donald Trump's like hats that were like made in China.
Made in America. Exactly. This is exactly my point. If you are such a fucking patriot, Donald Trump, anything that has the American flag on it should not be made in China. But who am I? Who am I? I'm just a snowflake liberal.
Oh, man. I really do think that conservatives have taken back snowflake with a vengeance, because there is no more sensitive group of people in the entire world than American conservatives whining about, I don't know, Dr. Seuss, or not understanding women's soccer, which is another thing that happened this week. That's all the time we have for the show. Julissa and Tien, thank you so much for joining me. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die, per usual. And thanks to all of you for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please rate us and subscribe and tell your friends. And if you want to submit something for a future Fuck That Guy segment, or you just want to send us a note, we can be reached at hysteria@crooked.com. We look forward to being with you next week. I am from another planet, this nation, Fort Janet. But these girls gotta fan it. Y2K email and scan it. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer, and our editor is Sarah Gibalaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Our digital team is Nar Melkonian and Magic Root. Thank you to Juliet Beckstrand for production support every week.
Save big on everything when you shop at Menards. We're your destination for electrical products. Keep yourself safe and protected with new GFCI outlets from Legrand. They're available in a variety of finishes. Now at Menards, save big on all Legrand outlets and dimmer switches. View our entire selection of Legrand products today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.